People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this special edition of PTR, we bring you Colombia, Issues and Answers, an evening with Sandra Alvarez.
What the U.S. is doing in this intervention, using the mask of the war on drugs, is repressing people, using this drug policy to militarize, to take advantage of the economic resources in Colombia. And it's affecting people here because it's also part of a domestic drug policy that is doing similar things, militarizing certain neighborhoods and not really taking care of the problems.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Colombia, Issues and Answers, an evening with Sandra Alvarez, was originally broadcast live on KVMR FM radio from the Northern California Center for the Arts in Grass Valley, California. Sandra Alvarez heads the Colombia Human Rights Program at Global Exchange, a San Francisco-based human rights organization. Ms. Alvarez has a background in international issues in Latin America and a long-standing commitment to human rights work. The daughter of Colombian immigrants, she was educated in the United States and Spain and is currently leading the effort at Global Exchange to educate Americans on the U.S.'s role in war-torn Colombia and build up grassroots solidarity with the millions of Colombians who support a peaceful, negotiated solution to the conflict.
The situation in Colombia is the fact that nobody really knows what's going on. And given that my family's there, I've visited many times and I spend all my time on it, one of the things I really love to do is to talk about what's going on there and try and get people aware of what's going on so that people become more involved. But not only for Colombian people, but also for ourselves here, because it's not just something that affects one country or a certain amount of people. It's something that affects us all, because what the U.S. is doing in this intervention, using the mask of the war on drugs, is repressing people, using this drug policy to militarize, to take advantage of the economic resources in Colombia. And it's affecting people here because it's also part of a domestic drug policy that is doing similar things, militarizing certain neighborhoods and not really taking care of the problems. My name is Sandra Alvarez. I was born here in California, raised nearby in Fairfield. And one of the problems growing up here is the fact that people didn't know what Colombia was. What do people think about when they hear Colombia? They think coffee and they think cocaine. What I think about when I think of Colombia, I think of my family. I think of wonderful traditions. I think of a country that's just enormously rich in biodiversity. In fact, one thing I just learned recently is that Colombia's Amazon is 1/15 the size of the Amazon in Brazil, but it has about the same amount of biodiversity. I mean, it's a country that has plains, that has mountains, that has numerous rivers, that has coasts on two sides of the country, and a lot to offer the world. But unfortunately, what people are interested in are not the people or the culture. They're interested in the natural resources and many other things like that. And that's what makes me think of a certain song that is a cumbia. Cumbia is a very traditional rhythm from Colombia. And I just wanted to sing a few lines because this is what I think of when I think of what's going on. Violencia, ¿por qué no permites que reine la paz, que reine el amor? Violencia, ¿por qué no permites que reine la paz? And what those lines mean is violencia, why don't you let love reign? Violencia, why don't you let peace reign? And what's happening in Colombia is a lot of violence, violencia. The roots of the conflict in Colombia don't go back to just cocaine. Some people even know that marijuana used to come from Colombia too, until the U.S. took over that market. But before that, there has been a struggle for land in Colombia, basically since independence, which has meant the displacement of many peoples. But over the last 50 years, this struggle has become much more acute. In the late 40s, there was a period called La Violencia, the violence, which was a period of intense conflict between the two established political parties, the liberals and the conservatives, where between 200 and 300,000 people died. In order to end this violence, the military staged a coup. It's the only coup in the history of Colombia. And 4 years later, the two parties came together in the late 50s to start an agreement called the National Front. It was a pact between the two parties. And this is really important to understand in Colombia because the two main problems are closed political system, which we saw with the signing of this agreement of the National Front, the Frente Nacional, in 1958, at the beginning of it. And the other problem is the concentration of land and resources, which is helped by having a closed political system. So since the late 50s, the political system in Colombia has been dominated by the elites of two parties, the liberals and conservatives. That means that no one else has access to a political system. And that is one of the reasons why, one of the main reasons why there have been the development of guerrilla groups in Colombia. And there have been numerous social movements who have tried to gain access to the political system only to be squashed, or in many cases to be co-opted. But most importantly, the repression in Colombia has been going on a long time. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there have been numerous peace agreements that are signed between the government and the guerrilla groups. But what we see is a pattern where the guerrilla groups, the government will sit down, sign a peace accord, and then the leaders of the people who had gotten together to try and develop a peace process in Colombia will be killed or will have to flee the country. This is something that's happened over and over in Colombia. There is now another peace process that is underway that is very fragile. And so what comes into play here is the United States intervention. The United States, with their decision to back the Plan Colombia, they have really created a hostile environment for the peace process. I don't mean to say that with a peace process everything will be perfectly fine and there won't be no problems. There are numerous problems in Colombia, but the problem is that the United States, with its intervention, is causing much more harm than it is good, and we have to really rethink why is the United States going into Colombia. And why is Colombia asking the United States to go? So just to talk a little bit about what's in Colombia. Colombia is in the northern part of South America. As I said before, it has coasts on the Pacific, coasts on the Atlantic. It has over 40 million people. About a third to a quarter of the population is of African descent. The number of this population is third in the Americas after Brazil and the United States in terms of population of African descent. There are about 2% of the population is indigenous, with 80 different tribes in Colombia and about 64 different languages. And the rest are mestizo or of mixed heritage or white. And because of the geographical diversity of Colombia, it lends itself to many cultures and beautiful music and dance all over the country, something that we don't hear about much here. When with the development of the country, what we saw was that from the north, from the Cartagena region, where the Africans were brought in through slavery, they developed the country along a river. And in order to develop the country, what they did was they displaced people, because campesinos would go prepare land in order to be used for agriculture, for subsistence. Then large landowners would hire militias, would organize militias to displace people. They displaced indigenous people, they displaced Afro-Colombians, they displaced campesinos. For that reason, a lot of Afro-Colombian indigenous people live in many of the more remote areas, the jungle areas, the rainforests, and have escaped persecution in that way. Unfortunately, what that means today is that displacement is a tool that's being used by a lot of people in order to gain gain economic benefit. And it's something that we've seen throughout the whole history. It's not something new. But today, we see that there are over 2 million people displaced in Colombia. This is the worst case in the hemisphere, and I think second to Rwanda, if I'm not mistaken. Many people will look at the conflict in Colombia and think, well, why shouldn't we help the government with the war on drugs? But what ends up happening is that this displacement is perpetrated by paramilitaries. Displacement was caused by militias. It's a tool for economic gain. And paramilitaries have been in the whole history of Colombia to repress, used as an extension of large landowners, narco-traffickers, and the economic elite. There's no exception today. But what we do see today is that the military and the paramilitaries work hand in hand. Not only in the drug-producing regions do the military and paramilitaries work hand-in-hand, but in all regions they work hand-in-hand. And that's one of that is the biggest threat to the people of Colombia. What we hear a lot in the mainstream news about the guerrillas, and we hear about all of the human rights abuses that they are committing, and I'm not here to deny that. In fact, I do not in any way condone that, but the reality is that between 70 and 80% of all human rights violations of massacres are committed by paramilitaries. And not only have international organizations recognized the links between paramilitaries and militaries like Amnesty International, like Human Rights Watch, but also the United Nations and our own U.S. State Department. So then we have to ask, well, why are we supporting the Colombian military if we have all this evidence? Well, in Colombia, over the last 10 years, because the issue of communism can't be used to intervene in different countries, the new reason to intervene in countries is narco-trafficking. It's not only happening in Colombia, it's happening in Mexico, it's happening in Haiti, in El Salvador. We're seeing bases being rebuilt in order to fight this war on drugs. But what are some of the results of this war on drugs? Many times we hear the government saying, well, look what we've done in Peru, look what we've done in Bolivia. And they cite all these statistics of how much of coca production they've been able to reduce. Unfortunately, the same amount that they've reduced in Peru and Bolivia has increased in Colombia. Now in Colombia, they are using horrible chemicals to eradicate coca, and they're just shifting production all over the place. One of the things I understand is very important to the community that's listening to this radio station is the issue of the environment. So just to shift focus on that for a little bit, I wanted to talk about what fumigations have meant in Colombia. It's something that's been taking place in Colombia for about 25 years, if not more, using different types of chemicals to eradicate first marijuana, also poppy for opium and heroin, and the coca plants. In the last 8 to 10 years, they have vastly increased this policy, this strategy of source crop eradication. And what we have seen, as I mentioned before, is that the production has moved from Peru and Bolivia into Colombia. And now in Colombia, with this Plan Colombia, they have focused on the southern part of the country. The southern part of the country is part of the Amazonian rainforest. And so now that they are focusing the Roundup, which is the glyphosate used in this Roundup chemical, which is produced by Monsanto, they're using that to fumigate from very high altitudes because in order to fumigate large areas. The consequences of this type of strategy are just horrible for the people of Colombia, but not only for the people, of course, for the environment, but what's happening to the people? Women are giving birth to babies with birth defects. Children are having mental problems. The fishing is being completely contaminated. All the waters are being contaminated. Cattle are being fumigated. In fact, one senator from Minnesota, Senator Wellstone, went to Colombia to go visit and see different areas, see what the USAID is going towards in Colombia, and he himself was fumigated. Now, they say that they have really good aim with this strategy, with these fumigation planes, but if they can't protect a U.S. senator, what are they doing to the people? What are they really doing to the people?
This is People's Tribune Radio, and you're listening to Colombia, Issues and Answers, an evening with Sandra Alvarez of Global Exchange. This program was originally broadcast live on KVMR FM radio from the Northern California Center for the Arts in Grass Valley, California.
It's not just about fumigations. Plan Colombia is this strategy that when you read in newspapers, the idea behind Plan Colombia is to restore democracy, strengthen democracy in Colombia, and to stop drug trafficking. It originally was in 1998, the President Pastrana had this plan called the Plan Marshall, just, you know, built on the Marshall Plan. He thought that he was going to be able to quickly go through a ceasefire and peace process with the guerrillas, and he thought, I need money for reconstruction afterwards. So he came to the United States asking for social and economic aid. The U.S. wasn't interested in giving social economic aid. So later in 1999, they resubmitted the plan. It's now called Plan Colombia instead of Plan Marshall. And it has a huge military component. And that's what the U.S. was interested in. They got the first draft from Colombia in Spanish, worked with it here, changed it to be a military strategy, and approved it last June, and passed $1.3 billion in mostly military aid to Colombia. About 80% of the aid was military aid. In the legislation that was passed last year, there was two important things that many people in the human rights community are looking towards but have seen are failing in terms of safeguards for the Colombian people. One are the human rights conditions that were attached to Plan Colombia. And what these conditions were saying is that before we give the aid, we have to do an investigation and see if they have done made any changes in the human rights situation in Colombia. They need to make sure that that the Colombian government is cutting the ties between the military and the paramilitaries, that they are trying military officers in civilian courts, and a list of about six different things. When they went to evaluate these conditions in Colombia, they saw that Colombia had only been able to comply with one of the six, but they had added a loophole when they passed the legislation. The loophole said that if the president deems it in the national security interest of the United States to waive these conditions, that he could. And they passed Plan Colombia, this part of Plan Colombia, on an emergency basis. So that all of a sudden, it's an emergency, though it's a situation that's been going. This drug situation has been going on for a long time. So they waived the human rights conditions. What kind of message does that send to Colombia? It sends the message to the military and to the paramilitaries: you go ahead and do your thing. We're going to support you. And the message that it sent here to all the people who support it was: we're going to support them. We can do what we want in Colombia. When they were passing the legislation, we saw who was really behind supporting it. We saw that it was the CEO of Occidental Petroleum who was testifying in Congress trying to get military aid passed. And you're thinking, well, isn't this for drug policy? Why is it Occidental Petroleum? Occidental Petroleum has a large stake in Colombia. They've been trying to drill in the northeastern region of Colombia on indigenous territory for the last 8 years. The indigenous people there, the UWA, have gotten international solidarity, support, and recognition for their struggle against Occidental Petroleum. And 2 or 3 days after the aid passed, and after knowing what the aid meant and how much Occidental had put into getting this aid passed, they saw the military accompany the machinery into the UWA territory in order to start drilling, and they broke up a peaceful sit-in that the UWA had for many days. And that was just kind of a harbinger of what's to come. Much more militarization of different areas in order to take advantage of the natural resources. But I mentioned that there was two things. The other thing in the legislation was that many people have been talking about Colombia being a new Vietnam. And so in legislation, they put a cap on the number of both military and civilian personnel that can go into Colombia. Military personnel couldn't go above 500, civilian couldn't go above 300 unless there was some sort of evaluation. And, you know, they had to go through this huge long process in order to lift that cap for a determined period of time, 90 days. What's come out recently is that this year they're passing, instead of it being called Plan Colombia, Bush is changing kind of the view of the ball game. He's changing the name to the Andean Regional Initiative because they saw that the countries surrounding Colombia were very concerned about what it meant to give such an infusion of aid to the military in Colombia. It was really going to create an imbalance as well as cause the violence, the fumigations, the environmental destruction, and the refugee spillover into all the different countries. So they were very upset and not in agreement. Most of the countries were not in agreement with the aid. So this year it's the Andean Regional Initiative, meaning that they're going to give millions of dollars to the countries surrounding Colombia, as well as Colombia. It sounds great. We're doing something against drugs, right? Let's go blame it on them instead of thinking about what are we doing here to stop it. Instead of thinking about what are the health issues behind why people are taking drugs and how are we really dealing with it here. But what I was going to say about the Andean Regional Initiative is that that cap that's very important to make sure that this not become a large-scale intervention. Last week, one of the staffers was doing research in a congressperson's office, was doing research on the legislation to check out all the fine print, what all these numbers and this and that meant. And they saw that included in this legislation was some language that would lift the cap of the number of civilians that can go into Colombia. And I don't know if people have seen, but in the newspapers in the last few months, we've been hearing a lot about who these civilian contractors are that are going into Colombia. And it's a new way of doing war. It's privatizing the war in Colombia because it's civilian contractors that fly the fumigation planes, civilian contractors that are flying some of the helicopters, and that have actually helped out in rescuing some Colombian military and things like that. And they have been shot down. People have been killed. But because they're not military members, nobody hears about it. Nobody knows about it. There's no accountability. And the administration knows that, and so they made sure that this provision was put in there, that there is no cap on civilian contractors, on civilian people that could go into Colombia. This is very dangerous. It means that a lot can happen in Colombia without the U.S. public knowing about it. So what's another reason why the U.S. is going into Colombia? Well, with Plan Colombia, they've called it a push into southern Colombia. And so the three battalions that were organized are anti-narcotics battalions going into the southern part of Colombia. And a lot of the helicopters are used down there as well. And southern Colombia happens to be the area that the FARC are mostly in control of or have been historically. When another person that works with me at Global Exchange went into Putumayo, a state on the border of Ecuador, and he saw the destruction. He saw the coca plants. As you drive down the street, you can see down the roads in the countryside, you can see them. When they went to go talk to the people would all talk about the disastrous consequences of the fumigations, but you'd bring up paramilitaries and nobody would say a thing. Because that's one of the silent ways of repressing people in Colombia. The paramilitaries say that they are going after the guerrillas in Colombia, but what they do is anybody that is working for social justice, that is working to organize their community, that has a soup kitchen, that works with women, that works with children, they call them guerrillas. What this strategy is doing is supporting a lot of the military-industrial complex here. Which means that it's supporting Lockheed Martin, it's supporting Sikorsky, United Technologies, it's supporting Monsanto, who's producing the chemicals. And just to give another example of how it's supporting these corporations, when they were debating Plan Colombia in Congress, we were really, really upset to see that some of the Congress members from Connecticut were supporting the aid and weren't talking all about human rights. Because Gagenson and Dodd and DeLauro, just to say a few names in case there's people who are from Connecticut listening, they had been really good on human rights in Latin America. They've been good on Cuba and some other things. But then Colombia comes up and they just keep their mouth shut. And so, why is that? Well, it's because Sikorsky, which makes the Black Hawk helicopters, which were included in this aid, is in their district. Actually, some of the aid got held up because of a debate between how much money was going to go towards Hueys, who had their districts in Texas, versus the Blackhawks, who had their districts in Connecticut. But I also want to talk about some of the good things that are happening in Colombia. I had the fortune to be able to go to Colombia twice this year. And the first time I went, we visited a couple of peace communities because despite the numbers of massacres and killings, which 6,000 people were killed last year due to political killings alone. This isn't talking about other types of violence, just political killings. And over the last year, massacres have actually doubled. We're hearing horrible statistics where it used to be 10 political killings per day, and now it's getting to near 20. And these are numbers that are absolutely horrible. They're sometimes easy to say, because 10 versus 20. But what it means is it's a whole family. It's a huge network of people that are affected by each time these people are killed. And it's not just, and it's people in all sectors of society that are being killed, from student leaders to trade unionists. In fact, more than half of all the trade unionists killed in the world in the last 10 years have been Colombian. But it's remarkable to see the hope that people have in Colombia and their desire to have connections with people internationally. And it's amazing to see what's going on. We were able to go visit two peace communities. And what a peace community is in Colombia, there's over 50 of them, is it's a community that has declared its active neutrality. That means that they have chosen to not participate in the war, to not help any of the sides in terms of passing on information, allowing recruitment, or anything of that sort. They're trying to live in peace and also create alternative ways of governing themselves. They have unbelievable structures of community councils and community leadership, as well as economic development projects of cooperatives. And all these people want to do is live on their land and produce what they know how to produce. I went to visit a place called San José de Apartado. It's in a region in Colombia near the Panamanian border. It's a region called Urabá, which stretches over two different states, Chocó and Antioquia. My family's from Antioquia, and the town we went to visit is in Antioquia. So for me, it was a particularly touching and inspiring and painful as well. Because this community, just to give you an example, this community in 1997 declared their neutrality. They declared themselves a peace community. 5 or 6 days later, the paramilitaries came in and committed a massacre and displaced the population. But that didn't stop them. And they've been able to organize support from within the country, working with national groups like Justicia y Paz, Justice and Peace, as well as international groups like Peace Brigades International. And one of the things that they asked us to do was to, us meaning Global Exchange and another group that we went with, Fellowship Reconciliation, to accompany them in their process to reach justice around what's been happening. So what we want to ask people are, talk to your Congress members. When they start getting calls, they never get any calls. If they get 5 calls, they'll be like, oh, my constituents are thinking about this. Because for every call, there's another 25 people who are thinking the same thing that haven't done anything, that haven't called. And talking to Congress people saying, the military is not helping the Colombians. And if we want to fight the drug war, let's fight it on demand. And let's talk about what's really going on in Colombia. Where's the transparency? Where is our concern for human rights and democracy the way that we keep talking? What's really happening along those lines?
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.